This is Michelle.
And this is Andrea, and we are Black Girls Vibe.
Yes, we are. Andrea, hasn't the love that we've gotten from people for the podcast, all the subscriptions, all the listeners, it's been pretty dope, hasn't it?
It has been very exciting. So,
indeed, indeed. Yeah. So we want to encourage folks to look us up on Facebook at Black Girls Vibe Tribe, and also continue to subscribe and listen at Google Podcasts and Spotify and a number of other platforms. Andrea, you ready to get into some of this work?
Yes, let's do it.
Let's do it. So congratulations to you, your UAB Blazers, last week, sealing a berth in the CUSA football championship.
That's right. Thank you. Go yes. Blazers.
Yes, go Blazers. Now, the Yale Bulldogs didn't have as good a fate on yesterday. We played our rivals, Harvard, and we're challenged to the tune of 45-27, but there's always next year. So I'm still saying go Bulldogs in spite of what happened yesterday.
There you go.
Yeah. So it's timely that discussion today, because just today the news broke that it sounds like the Cleveland Browns are contemplating talking to Condoleezza Rice about replacing Hugh Jackson. I'm curious, what are your thoughts about that? I have thoughts, but I want to know what you think first.
Yeah, so I found it to be very interesting and very surprising. Like, I know she's been a big Browns fan and supporter, and clearly she's on the panel for the college football rankings and everything. And I know that there's been a big push to you know, we've seen, like, with the Spurs and with some other teams, to have more women in coaching positions and just, you know, working with the team. But I found it to be very interesting that she would be a selection for a head coach position in the NFL.
Yeah, you know, for me, the skeptic in me, you know, this, for one, it's the Browns browning to me, number one.
Agreed.
Just, you know, Browns being the Browns, right? But for me, from like a Rooney Rule standpoint, this is a complete kind of circumvention and thumbing of the nose to it. It's like, we're going to interview someone who is dazzling and brilliant in her area and regarded throughout the country, but frankly has not put in any of the work necessary to be a successful head coach in the NFL.
Right. So it's basically, we'll have you interview for the sake of having you qualify, like you said, under the Rooney Rule, but you're not really the best candidate.
Yeah. And what does it say to minority candidates, frankly, like the other Hugh Jacksons of the football universe who are looking, the minority candidates who are looking for jobs, who hear that? And even if it's in jest, there's something to me insulting about it, this notion that Condoleezza Rice is equipped and has the skill set and the credentials to do what you've been putting 10, 15, 20 years of sweat equity into. But yeah, so I could probably soapbox, and I imagine you could soapbox endlessly about this.
Yeah.
We'll move on to the next topic.
Right. We'll see what happens with it.
We'll see what happens. Hopefully this is not a story. Like, hopefully someone just misspoke.
Right.
So let's talk about the Crimson Tide for a second, and Coach Saban's decision to play Tua yesterday against Citadel. I was worried about it, and thankfully we ended up coming out on top despite a very sluggish first half. But, you know, I'm still wondering how much of that first half is related to his injury.
I know. I think so, too. And, you know, we've kind of talked offline about whether or not he should start, or whether we thought he should start leading up to the game. And so, you know, we've got the knee and just the risk of, you know, with the rivalry week coming up against Auburn and then the SEC championship and potentially going into the playoffs, it's just a lot to just kind of risk for, you know, mad kudos and props to Citadel, but, you know,
yeah,
it's not really a game that he needed to play.
Yeah, I agree. I heard Mike Wilbon kind of refer to it as a decision as kind of coach's arrogance. It was an interesting take. So we'll see how we do. We got the Iron Bowl coming up on Saturday, and then the SEC championship against Georgia the following Saturday, and hopefully then some rest.
Yes, definitely.
You know, I'm hopeful that we'll still be in the top four after December 1st, and that the outcome is such that we'll still be number one. So keeping fingers crossed there. Now let's segue over to the NBA for a second, and Carmelo Anthony and his being released by the Houston Rockets. Were you particularly surprised by that?
No. were you?
No, that's funny. You were like, so resolute. Like, no. No. Like, seriously, Michelle, is this even a question? I mean, 10 games in, like, I thought the experiment might go on longer. I mean, listen, Carmelo's always kind of been an enigma for me. He's a player that I think has always, I mean, here in the last 4 or 5 years, he's made it clear he wants to be a tech mogul. And I think his basketball moves have largely been driven by, okay, I need to stack these coins more so for what I'm going to do next after this basketball life, more so than worrying about, I think he wants a ring and a championship and all that. But I think it's pretty clear to me his decisions have more been driven about how much money, how much can I stack so that when I move off into this tech space, or more fully off into the tech space, because he's owned a business in the tech space for several years now, he wants to have kind of his nest egg available. But I feel like it's kind of been at the expense of the teams he's played for here recently, the Knicks, the Thunder, and now the Rockets.
Right.
Do I think he'll go to the Lakers? No, I don't know that any team really has a need for someone with Carmelo's skill set and his age, not to sound ageist, but.
No, but it's true. And like you said, he does have a track record since he left Denver of just signing for the large contracts for teams that may or may not make any sense for where he is. And just, I don't know if it's an unwillingness or whatever it is, but like you said, as an aged and seasoned veteran, just maybe not being willing to take a different role on a team.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I know we've got limited time before we go into our next segment, but I wanted to take the opportunity to shout out to Simone Biles.
I don't think
that she gets nearly enough love. This young lady is doing it all. She's more or less the Serena Williams of women's gymnastics. And because of all the scandals that have been associated with the U.S. gymnastics team on the women's side and the unfortunate incidents and the predatory nature of Dr. Larry Nassar up at Michigan State, I just feel like her accomplishments have been overshadowed. She's the first American to medal in all events at the World Championship, and she has the most career world titles of any gymnast, male or female. So shout out to Simone.
Definitely.
Let me come back to UAB right quick too and say shout out to UAB for how they came back, how they've come back with a roar in only their second season back after what seemed like a permanent shuttering of the program just a couple of years ago. I know they went to a bowl last year, and I think they won the bowl game. So shout out to them for continuing to shine just so recently after having come back to the college football scene.
I know. It was good to have them back. I think we probably need to double check. I know we played in the Bahamas Bowl, but not quite sure we pulled it off. But we'll double check and see.
We will check on that. And so coming up in our next segment, we're going to talk a little bit about our experiences with HBCUs and football games and football classics. So don't leave. We'll be right back. And we're back.
Yes, we are.
Yes, ma'am. So off the top, you know, when I'm wrong, I'll say I'm wrong. When I've made a mistake, I'll say I've made a mistake. And as much as it pains me to acknowledge, when I said that UAB won its bowl game last year, I was a little incorrect, like all the way incorrect.
Well, that's okay. It happens sometimes, and we've corrected it, but we'll see what happens this year.
Yes, yes. Again, have the CUSA conference battle already lined up for next week. So good luck to them, and we'll be cheering from afar, but cheering for them nonetheless.
Yes.
So moving on to this segment's topic, we're going to talk a little bit about HBCUs and football. I know we both have connections to HBCUs, just briefly. My parents went to Miles College, which is an HBCU here in the Birmingham area, actually in Fairfield, Alabama, and that's where they met. And so that's my connection. Andrea, what's your connection to HBCUs?
So my mother is a graduate of Rust College in Holly Springs, Mississippi, and my father is a alumni of Jackson State University in Jackson, Mississippi.
Sure. So there you have it. So we are both HBCU babies, if you will. Got a little HBCU DNA in us. So it's a pleasure to talk about this topic a little bit. And some people don't know the rich history and relationship that HBCUs have with football. Andrea, you have any favorite HBCU players that made it to the NFL or HBCU coaches you want to shout out, talk about?
Well, I think the first that comes to mind is Jerry Rice, mainly because he's from Starkville, Mississippi, and some of my relatives actually graduated from his alma mater, Mississippi Valley State, so I think he's top on the list.
Okay, I didn't realize that little factoid. That's pretty cool. Like, Rice is probably, growing up, he was definitely my favorite player, so that's an interesting little tie-in right there. That's what's up.
Yeah.
And we all know that the venerable Eddie Robinson, who is the head coach of Grambling for years, in my mind, is still the winningest college football coach of all time. So there's a huge football tradition there. You got Jerry Rice, you got Eddie Robinson, you got Doug Williams, also, I think, a Grambling grad. Shannon Sharp, I think, went to Savannah State. Michael Strahan went to Texas Southern. So you got a ton of NFL players, like well-known Hall of Fame NFL players who are connected to HBCUs. And so you talk about HBCUs, you talk about footballs, you have to talk about the game experience. And it's a total experience. We have these longstanding, usually longstanding rivalries called classics. They're played at neutral sites. They're part of the regular season matchups. And a couple of them, to name a few, include the Bayou Classic, which is held. Is that usually around Thanksgiving time down in New Orleans?
Yes, it is. So I think it would have been this past weekend, actually.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. Turkey Day Classic, which is Alabama State's annual Thanksgiving Day football game. The Chicago Football Classic. And in Birmingham, the one that I'm most familiar with, we have the – and Andrea is too – the Magic City Classic. And that is the annual matchup between the two largest HBCUs in the state, Alabama A&M, which is in Normal, Alabama, which is just outside of Huntsville or right near Huntsville, and Alabama State University, which is in Montgomery. And the Magic City Classic is a huge deal here. You have about 60 to 70,000 in Legion Field and probably another 100,000 outside the field around the perimeter tailgating. So it's a big deal. It's a week-long series of events leading up to the game that Saturday. You see a lot of corporate involvement, a lot of business development activities going on during that week. It literally has gone from an event that used to be one day where you had the parade that morning and the game that afternoon to literally you're spending the whole week doing things that are Magic City Classic related. And it's kind of a happening.
Exactly. I would definitely say you're right. It's gone from game day Saturday to a definitely week-long experience.
Right. So now, Andrea, am I correct that when you played in the band in high school, right?
That is correct.
And when you were in the band in high school, did you all play at the Classic in the parade?
We did. That would be like the highlight of marching band season. So we would travel down and we'd perform in the parade. And part of it too was we had a rival high school with a similar name. That was Jackson Olin.
Yes.
In, Birmingham. And so yep. Go through the, you know, who's the real JOJ and all that. So it was a good time. It was a good experience.
Oh, y'all like had this like rivalry with JO based on the JO.
Yeah.
Very interesting. But to Andrea's point, so her involvement in the bands, like bands are just as much as part of the Magic City Classic or frankly any classic experience. And HBCU bands have names and they have followers just like the teams have followings. You know, you have Miles College, they have the Purple Marching Machine. A&M has the Marching Maroon and White.
Yeah.
ASU, Alabama State, the Mighty Marching Hornets. Jackson State.
The Boom of the South.
That's right. Got to represent Tuskegee, which has the oldest HBCU band, the Marching Crimson Pipers. So it's just a rich tradition, a rich history. If you've not been to an HBCU game, highly recommend it. You have to stay for the halftime show because guess what? That's when the bands go all out.
Definitely.
That's just as important as the outcome of the game. How did the bands perform? What songs did they do? What dances did they do during the breakdown? Like, all that is a part of it, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's the clearly there is the football game, but yeah, it's truly a battle of the band's halftime performance. See who can be outdone.
That's right. That's right. And I think we're coming up on championship week. So you got a bunch of the football conferences playing their championship games. So it won't be a classic, but if you have an opportunity to go to an HBCU football conference championship game, I would definitely do that. I know there's at least one HBCU-oriented bowl, and there are probably several more, but I know there's one going on in Atlanta at the Benz on Saturday, December 15th, called the Celebration Bowl.
Right.
And a matchup between the champion of the SWAC conference and the champion of the MEAC.
Right.
And I guess we'll know by next Saturday night who'll be playing in the Celebration Bowl, because by then all of the conference championships will have occurred. Well, Andrew, you got anything else to add on the richness of HBCUs and football and that experience?
No, I think we've covered it. It's, you know, like we said, just the football, the whole parade and the halftime performance is definitely something that's unlike, you know, your traditional football games. So, like you said, if you have an opportunity, check out one of the classics or definitely the Celebration Bowl.
Sounds good. Well, guys, next up, we're going to have a little PSA. And then after that, we're going to talk about our experience attending the Atlanta United soccer match last month. So don't go anywhere. We'll be back soon.
Prostate cancer affects men from all walks of life. There are more than 150,000 new diagnoses and 27,000 deaths annually due to the disease. Black men are 1.6 times more likely to have prostate cancer than white men. The Mike Sly Foundation for Prostate Cancer Research, driven by the visionary leadership of former SEC and CUSA Commissioner Mike Sly, works to enable more research that will save lives. There are several ways in which you can join the foundation in its efforts. For one, you can make a donation. Also, those with Alabama car tags can sign up to get a prostate cancer tag. The foundation is currently paying the $50 first-year commitment fee for those who do so through its website. Over 80% of the commitment fee and subsequent $50 renewal fee goes directly towards prostate cancer research. Go to MikeSlyFoundation.org for more information on donating or signing up for the car tag. For college basketball fans, on Saturday, December 15th, the first Mike Sly Invitational between Auburn University and the University of Alabama at Birmingham will be held at Legacy Arena in Birmingham. Tickets are available via Ticketmaster. To stay up to date on events and news, follow the Mike Sly Foundation on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
And we're back for our final segment. A couple of weeks ago, Andrea and I had the opportunity to attend an Atlanta United match. They played the Chicago Fire, and it was one of the last games, if not the last home game or match of the regular season. So Andrea and I have been talking about it a little bit. Andrea?
Yeah.
Say hello. Come on in.
Hello. Yeah.
So why don't you share with the group your thoughts about the match, your experience of the match?
So overall, you know, it was interesting, right? Because I clearly learned, or it's like I knew before, but had confirmation after the match that I know absolutely nothing about the game of soccer.
Listen, concur. It was so crazy because usually, like when I go with to matches with friends, and when Andrea and I go in particular, like there's conversation. We're commenting on the plays, the execution of the plays, everything. It was like awkward silence most of the match.
Right. It was more like clearly we know when they score.
Right. Right.
But anything regarding like, are there player positions,
strategy?
Yeah.
No idea. No appreciation for it. So it made for a fairly awkward experience. So to everybody out there, don't go to a soccer match until you've done some like very basic boning up on what the strategy is, what the type of positions are. Because I'm ashamed to say, like, before this match, I hadn't done that.
No.
And I think it ended up impacting my experience. And it sounds like, Andrea, you would agree with that that assessment, too.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, like, it was the first year in the Bins, I believe. And, you know, they've done fairly well as a new upstart MLS team. But and so the energy is great in the stadium.
Absolutely, yep. Yep.
They're doing well this season. You know,
yeah, they're doing so well, in fact, that they're in the Eastern Conference Finals against New York's team, and I'm struggling to recall the name up. Exceedingly well to only be in their second season, and we talked about this some too. I've marveled at the level of fan support that the team has is incredible for it to only be in its second season. I did have the opportunity to attend a game the first season, but while they were playing, they were still playing at Bobby Dobbs Stadium at Georgia Tech before they moved into the Bins last fall. But the energy at that match was crazy. I mean, it just to think that just a couple of months before then, that was the beginning of their first season.
Right.
I think what I found fascinating about MLS and United in particular, this concept of these supporter groups that are officially like fan groups that are officially sanctioned and affiliated with any particular team. And there are four of them. There are four supporter groups for the Atlanta United: Footy Mob, Terminus Legion, Resurgence, mm-hmm. and Faction.
The Faction, yes.
Right. And I know, Andrea, we ran into a friend of yours that was kind of breaking down that each one has kind of its own unique identity.
Right. Like the Footy Mob is kind of the kind of hip hop group. And I think there was one that was more like a suburban, kid-friendly based supporter group. But, you know, it was good. And I told him later that he at least shared that with us, because when we were out tailgating, like, we saw the different groups. But
sure.
Then when we got inside the stadium and they had the flags, and it's almost like, I mean, it basically is like the cheering section.
Yep.
For the team. So it was nice to at least have that insight beforehand.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you've ever been to the Bins before, these supporter groups all sit in the area that's the section of seats that's closest to that big open part of the Bins. And so our seats were facing that big open window. And so we were directly facing, we were on one side of the pitch, and they were there in the, not the end zone, because it's not football, but they were behind the goal
right
on the other side of the pitch. And they were rocking and rolling the whole time.
The entire match.
The entire time. They did. And from what I understand, like, there's like some competition, I think. I don't know if it's amongst all of them or within some of the supporter groups, like, to see who can stay crunk the whole time. So there's some competitive aspect to that obviously I'll need to do more research on this to better understand. But they stayed lit the whole time.
Exactly.
And that energy permeates throughout the Bins. Like, it's incredible. So, yeah, I mean, I would definitely go to an Atlanta United match again, but definitely would need to do more homework to better understand what's actually going on in a soccer match, to make sure I can appreciate the skill sets required for each position. Well, for one, let me go back to make sure I know what the different positions are.
Right.
And then the skill sets associated with each. But yeah, it's definitely something that I would do again. Andrea, you think you would give it another try?
I think so. I mean, and like you said, I definitely want to educate myself a little bit more on the game before I go back. But I could see attending another match for sure.
Yeah, well, that's what's up. Well, that's about all we have for this particular episode, guys. We are coming up on year's end. But the good thing is there's a lot of great sports that happens in December and early January.
Definitely.
We got rivalry week. That's hard to say fast. On the college football side of the house. And so the Iron Bowl, Alabama, Auburn, like all the big state rivalry games are going on. Then next weekend we have the collegiate, all the conference championships going on, including Alabama versus Georgia.
Right.
So we'll be paying attention to that. And all the NFL stuff is going to start kind of winding down. The Chiefs and Rams are on tonight. Right now, I personally think we'll probably see, I'd love to see, I think at this point, a Saints-Chiefs matchup.
I think that would be a good one. They're both playing really well this season. So
absolutely. We'll absolutely. And we got, you know, some teams kind of coming hot at the right time. I mean, Dallas seems to be trying to string some wins together, and Pittsburgh is doing the same on the AFC side. Right. So there's a lot of good stuff to talk about. And so when we come back at you sometime, probably in early January, give everybody a chance to enjoy the holiday break. We'll have a lot to talk about. Maybe we will have gotten a chance to squeeze in another event or game or match to attend and can report back on that. But in the meantime, we're hoping everybody has safe and happy holidays.
Definitely.
Don't drink too much eggnog. and remember to follow us on Facebook at Black Girls Vibe Tribe, and to subscribe on Spotify and on Google Podcasts.
That's right. We're everywhere.
All right, guys. Take care.
All right.